It's a pleasure to be here. So I'll present some lecture on B-physics, actually, to be more precise. Of course, B-physics really is a wide subject with several interesting aspects, I mean, both about standard model physics, I mean, non-perturbative aspects and so on, and also for physics related to beyond the standard model. So I decided to select some aspects of B-physics which are particularly relevant, I mean, since this is a school about LSE physics, relevant in the LSE era, in the perspective of searching for physics beyond the standard model. So my lecture will have a really a specific focus, I mean, in the wide subject of B-physics, of concentrating on the measurement and the interest of B-physics for searching for physics beyond the standard model. So these are the three lectures. I mean, I will first today basically do an introduction on why flavor physics is still very interesting in the LSE era, and of course in this context beyond B-physics. Then tomorrow, I mean, or starting later on today, I will discuss a few aspects of B-physics phenomenology, I mean, the mixing, CP violation, and rare decays. And then in the last part, I will go on some explicit new physics scenario to discuss the specific signature in B-physics, especially in supersymmetry and also in non-supersymmetric scenario. Actually, since there was so much propaganda in supersymmetry, I feel a little bit on the side of trying to find the problem of supersymmetry, which, I mean, there are a lot of problems with supersymmetry flavor, so I will also try to keep an eye on that. So you see, supersymmetry is very powerful then. And, okay, please really interrupt me any time if there is something you don't understand, if I'm if I use language, something that, if there is anything unclear, please interrupt. Okay, so this is the plan of the first part. I will first introduce some of the flavor sector of the standard model, discuss the property of the CK matrix, and then I will discuss why flavor physics is interesting beyond the standard model. So, let's start with the flavor sector of the standard model. As you know, standard model is what describes particle physics nowadays, and it is a very simple and economical theory. Economical in the sense that the number of free parameters in this theory it's very small. I mean, once we specify, we understood which is the symmetry, I mean, this famous gauge symmetry, once we understand that and we understand that there are these three families, we have only 19 parameters, which really is a small number of free parameters compared to the famous supersymmetry, okay? So it's really an economical theory to describe what we observe. The Lagrangian is very simple. You can write it on a t-shirt, as probably have seen yesterday in Sven's talk. And it consists of two parts, the gauge sector and the Higgs sector. The gauge sector is the natural part of the model, the one we like most, the one we think we have really understood seriously, has been tested very nicely experimentally, okay? It's stable with respect to quantum correction, and it contains only three couplings, the three gauge coupling, and it's highly symmetric. I mean, has the famous local symmetry, the gauge symmetry, SU3 cross SU2 cross U1, but there's also a big flavor symmetry, which sometimes is not too much emphasized, and I will emphasize this a lot today. There is a big global flavor symmetry hidden in the gauge part of the standard model, because here we have several Fermion families, and which are basically not distinguished by the gauge interaction. So the ugly part of the model is the Higgs sector, or if you want more generally, the sector of symmetry breaking, which is clearly ad hoc. I mean, we put it there because to describe data, it's not sufficient to have this highly symmetric theory, but we need some to break this symmetry. So we have a clear indication of a non-invariant vacuum, both from the point of view of the gauge symmetry and from the point of view of the flavor symmetry. And this, of this Lagrangian, we have basically tested the ground state, okay, and not the dynamics, because we have not seen this famous Higgs field. We have not seen the excitation of the field which breaks the symmetry. And it's clearly not stable with respect to quantum correction. We have this famous hierarchy problem. And for what concerns this lecture, is really the origin of the flavor structure of the model. So you see immediately from this that, okay, flavor physics is interesting because it's related to the breaking of the most complicated part of the standard model, so to the Higgs sector. It's nothing to do somehow with the gauge interaction. So let's try to quantify a bit more what I mean by flavor symmetry. Okay. So if we look at this gauge interaction, in the gauge sector there are three identical replica, I mean three families, okay, of the basic fermion structures. The fermion structure contains one quark doublet, two quark singlets, so this QL is the quark doublet, up and down, left, we have the upright, downright, and then you have the two lepton fields. We have the lepton doublet and the lepton singlet. Now these fields, okay, are five independent fields from the point of view of the gauge symmetry, okay, but they appear in three replica, okay. So in addition to this gauge structure, there is a flavoring. This is running from 1 to 3. So there is a gauge structure which contains five independent objects, and also a flavor structure which runs from 1 to 3. Okay, the gauge Lagrangian is invariant under rotation in the flavor space of this field. Okay, there is really no distinction. Okay, the gauge interaction distinguishes between Q left and Q right. They have different gauge property, but doesn't distinguish between Q left 1 and Q left 2 or Q left 3. So the three families is completely independent. So for instance, if I take the Q left, so the left-handed field, which has this flavor indices I, and I rotate it in flavor space with a unitary transformation, and I make it Q left J, so this is unitary transformation, my gauge Lagrangian, which as far as the fermion field is only this kinetic type Lagrangian, is completely invariant. So this is a big symmetry, because okay, there is a U1 phase, okay, and an SU3 flavor dependent mixing. So if I rotate in SU3 space independently each of these five fields, the gauge interaction is completely unchanged. Okay, so there is a big global symmetry. It's a global symmetry, it has nothing to do with gauge symmetry. U3 to the fifth power, because we have five independent fields and each can be rotated in this SU3 space. So this flavor degeneracy of the gauge interaction is a U3 to the five global symmetry. Now, if you look more closely to this U3, I mean, as I wrote here, any unitary matrix can be decomposed in a phase which is independent on the flavor times an SU3. Okay, so I take out the global phase and then the SU3. So if I take out the global phases and I combine them, one can easily realize that among the global phases there is the lepton number, baryon number, hypercharge. Hypercharge is the only one which we gauge, and then there are these SU3 flavor mixing groups, which are completely unbroken by the gauge interaction. So this is part of are sometimes called accidental symmetries of the standard model Lagrangian. We don't understand why they are there. For instance, lepton number and baryon number are not even broken by the Higgs sector, and they are there accidentally, simply because once we assume that there are these five independent type of field to the sky physics, and we assume that there is SU3 cross SU2 cross a one gauge symmetry, we cannot write a renormalizable operator which violates baryon number or lepton number. Similarly, we cannot write operator which violate flavor mixing if we don't introduce the symmetry breaking terms. So what breaks the symmetry is the Higgs sector. In the standard model, the flavor degeneracy is broken only by the Yukawa interaction. The Yukawa interaction is a specific way to break this flavor degeneracy. So these are the two Yukawa interactions, for instance, for the quarks. Okay, we have the down type and up type Yukawa interaction. So I write here explicitly these flavor indices. So YD couple Q left flavor I to down right flavor K with a non-trivial matrix YD IK. Okay. And as you know, when the Higgs get a VF, this is what we need to give masses to the down and up quark. Okay. Now these matrices here are generic matrices which are not Hermitian. Indeed, we are Hermitian conjugate in the Lagrangian. So they are diagonalized by unitary transformation. So we need two independent unitary matrices to diagonalize these YD and YU. If you want, so I need a left-handed diagonalization matrix and a right-handed diagonalization matrix, because this is not Hermitian. What is Hermitian, if you want, is YD times YD dagger, or YU times YU dagger. So, introducing this arbitrary matrix, I can diagonalize them, and okay, once I diagonalize it, I get the eigenvalue of this mass matrix, which are the quark mass matrix. So this eigenvalue of the Yukawa coupling, as you know, are nothing but the ratio of the quark masses divided by the Higgs VEF. Okay, and there is a square root of 2 just for normalization. So these are the Yukawa coupling. So you see, these Yukawa coupling are quite peculiar, because we know what the masses of the quarks are. So in the case of the top, accidentally, the Yukawa coupling is 1. This is again big mystery why it's 1 and not 2 or 1.5. Okay. while in the case of all the other quarks, they are much, much smaller than 1. Okay. Now, you see, in principle, to diagonalize this YD and YU, I will need 4 independent unitary metrics, okay? Okay, one on the left and one on the right for the 2 independent. So in the case of, since I have this flavor symmetry, I can rotate my field. I can rotate down right and upright. I can, for instance, eliminate this matrix UD rotating appropriately down right. I can eliminate this matrix YU rotating appropriately U right. I can eliminate this matrix V rotating this Q field. But then I cannot rotate this other because these two are the same field from the point of view of gauge interaction. So if I don't want to break gauge interaction, if I want to remain in a gauge invariant basis, the best I can do is to choose a basis where only one of the two Yukawa is diagonal, for instance YD or YU, and then the other Yukawa in this gauge invariant basis will be given by a left diagonalization matrix, a unitary matrix times the diagonal part. So the fact that I can rotate in flow space this field down right, up right, and Q left allow me to diagonalize one of the two and remain with a non-diagonalization because I cannot rotate independently these two objects here. Okay, very clear, hope. And so we have one unitary matrix which remains, which is, if you want, is the mismatching, the diagonalization, the left-handed diagonalization of the left-handed diagonalization, which is a unitary matrix, and as you probably know, it's the so-called CKM matrix. Okay. Is this clear? Okay. So, of course, if I want to go in the mass basis for the quarks, I need to rotate independently up and down. So, in this case, if I want to diagonalize simultaneously up and down, I need to go to a basis which is non-gauge invariant basis. And then, in this way, this matrix V, okay, which was here, appears in the gauge interaction. Okay. A point which I want to stress, which in a sense is obvious, but sometimes it's really not too much stress, is that this, so you use it to the fact that this CK matrix appear in the left-handed charged interaction, so it appears in the gauge coupling of the W to the quark field, but it really, its origin is the Yukawa sector, okay? So this matrix V, the Khabib-Koyoshi-Makawa matrix, it's something which originates from the Yukawa sector, and since we like to work in a basis where the quarks are diagonal both up and down, we shift it in the gauge sector, okay? But it must be clear that this non-trivial mixing originates from the Higgs sector. So if I switch off the Yukawa coupling, I can rotate independently this. I don't need to rotate independently these two things. Of course, I have massless quarks, but and so this matrix disappears. So it's really important to stress that this flavor mixing is something which originates from the Yukawa coupling, and is shifted. It appears in the charged currents only because we want to work in this non-gauge invariant basis. Okay. So this matrix V is a unitary matrix because, as I said, this is the product of 2 unitary matrix. So it's usually parameterized this way. Okay. This is probably what you have seen many times in the textbook. And there is still some freedom in choosing the phases, I mean the global phases of this field, and one can easily show that at the end, if we remove all the arbitrary phases of the quarks, so we have 6 quarks, so we at the end we have 5 independent relative phases, so we can eliminate these 5 phases and we remain with the parametrization we contain 3 real parameters and 1 complex CP variation phase. And so this phase is the only source of CP variation in the model. Okay? So the standard model sector is described by 10 observable parameters, which are the 6 quark masses, and this 3 plus 1 parameter, which appear in this unitary matrix. It should be stressed, because it's a peculiar aspect of the standard model, that the rotation in the right-handed sector is completely unobservable. Okay, so in principle, the Yukawa from which we started were not needed to be diagonalized on the right side, but it's something that we cannot probe in the standard model because we have no charged interaction on the right-handed field. So this is something that we don't see in the standard model, but probably we can see in many extensions of the standard model. And also that the neutral currents remain flavor diagonal because it's only the misalignment between up and down which carry this non-trivial matrix here. So these are two peculiar aspects which are really characterize the flavor structure of the standard model. Okay, let's now look at some properties of these, since this matrix control all the flavor mixing, okay, in the standard model. It's interesting to understand some of these properties because are then used to interpret the experimental observation. So it's a unitary matrix, so V times V dagger is equal to 1. So from this relation, follow 6 so-called triangular relation. If I have V, V dagger, if I take so this equation, V dagger equal to 1, means that V dagger ij is equal to delta ij. Okay, so if I take I different from j, I get V dagger equal to 0. Okay. And so since we have sum of three pieces here, this gives to a relation of this type, okay, which is called triangular relation because we have the sum of three complex quantity equal to zero. So a complex quantity in the complex plane it's a vector. So we have the sum of three vectors which is equal to zero. One can show, okay, it's quite easy to show that the area of this triangle, there are six types of this relation according to which higher j indices I choose, 1, 3, 2, 3, okay, 1, 2, and so on. So the area of this triangle is always the same because it's due only to the fact that there is a CPU latent phase, is phase convention independent, and it vanishes if there is no CPU relation. Okay. An interesting property which follows from experiment is that this matrix is not a generic unitary matrix, but is very much close to the identity matrix. This is something which comes from observation. Okay, there was no theoretical reason to expect that. Indeed, people expanded this matrix in power of lambda, which is the so-called Khabibov angle, which is historically the first element of this matrix which have been identified. It's VUS, okay, it's the mixing between the first two generations. So this lambda experimentally is about 0.22. So what comes out experimentally is that the diagonal is 1 plus or the lambda square correction, okay. The mixing of the first two generations of VUS and VCD is over the lambda, so 0.22 is a small number. The mixing between the second and the third generation is lambda squared times a parameter A, which is over the 1. And the mixing between the first and the third generation is lambda cubed, okay? So it's even smaller. It's about 10 to minus 2, okay? Times again this parameter A, and times other two parameters, and here it appears the complex phase because we can always move the complex phase in the any generational mixing. It is convenient to move it in the most suppressed part. And so we have these other two parameters, rho and eta, which are again of order one, which contain the CPU latent phase. So we had, in general, this parameterization in terms of three real parameters and one phases. And I get again here written three real parameters, which are lambda, A, and rho, and one CPU latent phase, which is eta. So this is just a rewriting the CKM matrix in terms of some more convenient parameter because we express naturally the hierarchy, okay, of this mixing. So this mixing is a small mixing. So the Yukawa interaction don't break too much the flavor symmetry. So it seems that they are almost diagonalized by the same matrix. Okay. So coming back to this unitary triangle, given the fact that we have this hierarchy, we have the sum of these three pieces, and the only case where these three pieces are all of the same order in lambda is the case when we consider here indices 1 and 3, okay, so or 3 and 1. So this is called B2D triangle. So in this case, we have this type of sum, okay, VUB VUD times VCB VCD, VT VTD, and all these three pieces are of order lambda cube. You can see, so here you have VUD, which is basically 1, and VUB, which is lambda cube. So we have this vector, which corresponds to this term here. So I'm assuming that to be in a complex plane where this is the real axis and this is the imaginary axis. So 1 plus rho plus I eta is this type of vector. Then you have this other vector here where I have VTD, okay, which is 1 minus rho minus I eta. And then I have this other vector here, which is VCB, VCD. So you see VCB is lambda square, VCD is lambda, so I have this again lambda cube. If I consider, so this is the triangle, the 3-1 triangle, so relevant for instance for B2D transition. If I consider a triangle where I take for instance S going to D, which are relevant for Kaon physics, I find that two elements are of order lambda and one is of order lambda to the fifth, so it's a very flat triangle, which explains why seeing CP evaluation in Kaon physics is much more difficult than in B physics. Okay. So I introduce this because this is the standard way now people present results in flavor physics. And especially till a few years ago, the big issue in flavor physics was trying to determine which is the value of this parameter rho and eta, okay, which are those which appear in the most suppressed part. And so people speak about this so-called unitary triangle, okay, rho and eta, which we want is what you get from this relation if you normalize everything by this element here. Okay. I'm seeing something which is totally trivial for you, or because I see, I don't know, maybe it's afternoon, you're a bit sleepy, or I'm going too slow. So please don't be afraid to ask questions, okay? What it means, I don't know. It's a big mystery. it's a very good question. I only say that experimentally, this is what turned out to be. Okay, now we see these elements, okay, VUB, VUS, so they are all measured from the charge-carrier interaction. And experimentally, you find that those which correspond to the non-mixing, so let's say one-to-one, 2-2 or 3-3, okay, are large, close to 1, okay, while the mixing between the first and the second generation is of order of a parameter, which has been measured, is about 0.92, but the mixing of the second and third generation is about 0.22 square, and the mixing between the first and the third generation is even smaller. Clearly, this points to some approximate, maybe there is some approximate symmetry behind this, but this has not been identified yet. So it's not an exact, if it was an exact symmetry, so let's say we have, this matrix should have been 1, let's say, okay, that would have corresponded to an extra symmetry of the model. So there is not an extra symmetry, there is an approximate symmetry that we can only quantify in terms of this parameter lambda, okay? So this parameter are measured, okay, are measured by this type of interaction, so the interaction of the W between up and down, as we've seen at the beginning, in this vertex here, okay, when we work in a mass against state basis for up and down quark, here it appears this mixing matrix here. Okay, so this mixing matrix appear in the coupling of the W to up and down when we work in the basis where up and down are mass against state. So if I can measure decay, for instance, B going to up lepton neutrino, I access directly the corresponding VUB element, okay, modulus, because I typically measure, okay, rate. So, if you assume that this matrix is unitary, indeed, as expected by the model, we can completely determine it, even over-determine it, from data looking at this type of process. So there are some processes which we measure very precisely, for instance, VUD, so the decay of U into D, or better, D into U, is extracted from nuclear beta decays, okay, and is extracted with really high accuracy, with a precision of, sorry, this is wrong, should be 0.05, so it's less than 1 per mil accuracy, so this is, sorry, it's yeah, I think I should have changed this to Anyway, so the nuclear beta decay is determined with a Fermi-like accuracy. VUS, which is extracted from Kevin decay, so here is S going to U, has an error of 0.5%. And so this allows us to determine precisely this parameter, lambda, okay? Looking only at nuclear beta decays and K decays, we determine very precisely this parameter lambda, okay, with an accuracy of 1% or better, while these other elements, VU, B, or VCD, are determined by processes like B decays, B to U lepton neutrino, or even from neutrino scattering, I mean, neutrino plus production of charm decay, production of charm from neutrino scattering, so here we access VCD. VCB is accessed from B to charm decay, so VCB is determined with an error of 2%, so it's a quite good determination, okay? That was the element A, okay, which is determined quite good, 2% precision from this type of decays. And the most suppressed here, VUB, is determined with a non-negligible error, which, however, nowadays it's reasonable, so it's around 10%, okay? So, all these processes have been studied, okay? In principle, one can even try to determine VTB, from top decays, but here, these two elements are not competitive with the constant that we get from unitary, so in principle, we only need four independent constants to fix the independent parameter of the matrix. Then, if we assume that this matrix is unitary, all the rest is determined. And so, we have this rather good determination. Okay, in principle, there is the problem of determining the phase gamma from which it clearly cannot determine from process of like this. And this we'll come back on that tomorrow. But let me only state that the phase gamma, okay, the argument of UB, can be also determined from quasi-three-level process like this one, okay, where we have essentially a three-level process. Okay, we'll discuss it in more detail tomorrow, but the important point is that there is a clean way to determine the phase of this matrix using a three-level decay. Yes, sure.
So, for VCS, and experimentally, it's not very hard to measure, but can you just say why it's not?
It's, well, because, okay, here I'm in a sense sloppy because I only indicated the quark transition, okay, C going to S. Of course, to extract from real data, you have to measure an hadronic decays, like D decays, okay, and then there will be typically hadronic uncertainty, which are typically, in this case, you need some hadronic form factor to extract information. So the uncertainty comes from the hadronic form factor. So in this case, for instance, VCS, you can measure even with precision of less than 10%. However, VCS, you see, it's one up to small correction. So you don't get a sensitivity to determine lambda from VCS. And so in a sense, if you concentrate only on the mixing of the first two generations, there is only one parameter to determine, which is lambda. So the constant that you get from nuclear beta decays and K decays are much more constraining. And of course, this assumes unitarity. Of course, if you don't assume unitarity, the four elements are completely independent, but that is for now we stay on the standard model, okay? So, if we stay on the standard model, there are ways to determine this matrix using only this type of basic process, so the double interaction. The only element which we cannot access really in any way from this type of interaction at the three level are VTD and VTS, okay? Which is the mixing of the top with the light quark. This, on the other hand, they appear in loop-induced amplitudes, as you probably heard, in so-called penguin and box amplitude. Because in this case, for instance, if we look at process like this, B going to S, here we have double exchange at one loop level. So here we have several all possible up-type quarks, so we have up, charm, and top. And the top contribution, because of the G mechanism, which we discuss now in more detail, is the dominant one, so the top contribution being proportional to the top mass is enhanced, so in this way we get a sensitivity to VTQ, okay, which where Q is U, C, and so we get a sensitivity to this VTS and VTB, which otherwise we cannot access from three-level observable. Okay, so this type of process, the so-called delta F equal one, here delta F equal one because we change flavor by one unit, so-called flavor change in neutral current because we have a neutral current, so a Z coupled to B and S, okay, so we have a a neutral current will change flavor, okay, which is something which is forbidden at 3-level in the standard model. This we can access if we measure it in rare BDKs or in rare KDKs. While the delta F equal 2, here we have a process where we change two units of flavor. So we change a B into S and an S into B. So we can mix a B into a B bar. This type of process we measure in the so-called B bar mixing amplitude or in the KK bar mixing amplitude, so in the mixing of meson and antimeson. Okay. So this is an amplitude which allows to mix. So here I have not put the flavor, but it's an amplitude which allows to mix B and B bar. More explicit. So what we have is that we have a D. Okay. So you see I have a B which becomes an anti-B. And so I can couple a B meson to an anti-B meson. Okay. And similarly for the strange, so I can do it for the B sub S meson, B sub D meson, or KDKs. Okay. So this way we get sensitivity to these other suppressed elements. So
in this diagram, the exchange particles.
So here there is also the W. Okay. And in principle, here we have all possible type of up-type quark, so up, sharp, and top, okay? So in principle, I should sum 3 times 3 independent contribution, and we will discuss it now in more detail, but the top contribution turned out to be the dominant one, so these are basically negligible. So since the top quark contribution is the dominant one, what I extract here is the coupling VTS, okay? And similarly, if I look at, and so this would be the amplitude mixing BS into B bar S. If I take the analog with D, okay, I get the mixing of BD into B bar D. Here, what I access is VTD. So these are the two suppressed elements which I can get studying the mixing of B sub S and B sub D. Okay. You know, I never use Windows, but for the projection I need to use Windows, and so this is right. Okay, are there other questions? Okay, so coming back to this, so I showed you before this raw eta plane. Now, what I show you, just as a grand picture, okay, what probably you see if you go to a conference and people speak about flavor, you will typically see plot like this, where you see all the different experimental constraints to determine this parameter rho and eta. Since rho and eta are those which are less constrained, everybody shows only this type of plot. Of course, there are also measurement, precision measurement to determine A and lambda, but okay, these are less interesting because it's just we are changing of a few percent. So now we'll discuss in more detail all the various observables which goes into this field. Let me, what I want to stress now, I mean, introducing the field, is that there's been a lot of activity in this field in the last few years, okay, and thanks to the result of the B factories, which have been studied, for instance, Weber mixing with great accuracy, and Tevatron, which has recently measured the B sub S mixing, I mean, at least the mass mixing, and also the Kenyon factories, we have a really good consistency structure of these flavor structures, of this way that symmetry, or the flavor symmetry which appears in the gauge interaction, is broken by the Yukawa interaction. Here we have a consistency of very different type of measurement. We have, for instance, the measurement of VUB, which is a 3-level measurement, so really just measuring the charge coupling between a decay of B into U, okay, which determines this circle here. With, for instance, this measurement coming from this type of loop amplitude. This also, this measurement comes from loop amplitude. So we have a good consistency between 3-level and loop observable. And the agreement with the, between data and standard model expectation is even more striking if you consider other observables which are not shown in this fleet, like for instance Bitwise Gamma, which is one of these rare processes going through another type of loop like this one. Okay. So in all these cases, we see really a good consistency between the prediction of the standard model and the theory. So I think it's fair to ask the following question. I think even some politician or funding agency ask the question, are there still interesting measurements to be done in this field in the era of LSA, given that everything seems to be well under control, we understand well how flavor is broken, and this seems to be well described in the standard model framework. Well, of course, the answer is yes, otherwise I wouldn't be here. But the answer is yes, because we think that the standard model is not complete. Okay. There are several theoretical arguments which goes beyond flavor, okay, the inclusion of gravity, the stability, especially of the Higgs sector, the fact that we have seen some new type of flavor matrices in the neutrino sector, and also the fact that we don't understand this strange hierarchical structure, okay, we would like to find a dynamical origin for that. That all these point toward the fact that the standard model is not complete, so we have to extend it. And nowadays we have also some clear experimental evidence that the standard model is not complete from cosmology. We have dark matter, inflation, and the cosmological constant are all, if you want, clear experimental evidence that the standard model is that we need to introduce new degrees of freedom. The point is where this new degrees of freedom should be introduced. And if the new physics of quantum, if the new particle is not too far from the literary scale, we can expect some modification of the standard model prediction for a few low energy observable in the sector of flavor physics. And from this point of view, I think flavor physics is still extremely interesting, because what we have done so far, in a sense, has been checking the consistency of the standard model. What is much more complicated is to understand how much room there is for physics beyond the standard model. That, if you want, is the new type of perspective that we have in flavor physics nowadays. And from that point of view, I think there is still a lot of work to be done. So let's come back to the Lagrangian, okay? So the model point of view on the standard model Lagrangian is that what we used to call the standard model is only the low energy limit of a more complicated theory with new degrees of freedom, okay? So it's what we used to call an effective theory. I mean, an effective theory means that it's a theory which in principle doesn't need to be renormalizable, probably contains several more degrees of freedom, but all these degrees of freedom appear above some scale lambda, which we think to be above the electric scale, okay, because basically with LEP we have probed scale up to 100 GeV, we have not seen any new particle. So if we do experiment in flavor physics, and if you do generical experiment at low energy, you can integrate out all these new particles and describe the effect of the new degrees of freedom by a series of operator, higher dimension operator with dimension greater than 5, okay, which contains only standard model fields, because the standard model fields are the only light field of the theory, okay? So an effective theory is defined determining which are the light degrees of freedom, okay, and which are the symmetries. So we have understood which are the symmetries, or the gauge symmetry, okay? And we also understood which are the light degrees of freedom, which are the standard model particles, okay? And so now with this rule, we can write now a series of operator of dimension 5, 6, and so on, in terms of our degrees of freedom. And this is the most general parameterization of the new degrees of freedom as long as we do low energy experiment. Okay? So this is a very important point, that if we do low energy experiment, we can parameterize the new degrees of freedom in a completely general way by this effective Lagrangian. So what we have seen is only the first term in a series, okay, which are all the possible operator of dimension up to 4, which are the renormalizable operator, which are compatible with the gauge symmetry, okay? So if you tell me the gauge symmetry is SU3 cross H2 cross U1, and you tell me there are only these 5 fermion fields, I completely specify this structure here. And here there is an infinite series of extra operators. However, these extra operators have small influence at low energy because they are suppressed by a scale lambda, which is the scale of new physics, okay? Because the Lagrangian density should be of dimension 4, okay, to be a dimension when it is integrated on D4. So clearly, if we have an operator with dimension, is it clear what I have written here? Question. Is it clear? I'm sure it's not clear.
Does this mean you have degrees of freedom?
No, new degrees of freedom means anything else, okay? Supersymmetry, new particles, okay? The point that if there is, suppose that there is a new particle running, for instance, in a loop like this. For instance, in supersymmetry, there are new particles like W or stop, okay? However, these new particles are all heavy, okay? With masses above 100 GeV. So, if I want to describe this effect, okay, the effect of new particles running inside loops or even exchanges at three levels, what happens that all these collapse to an operator which has this structure here, times 1 over the mass of this new particle. Okay, if you compute exactly this diagram, you get something like this. There is some coefficient, okay? But you basically build something like the Fermi theory, okay? The Fermi theory was obtained in the old days when we were doing experiment at energy much below the W mass, okay? Integrating out this, we get indeed a Fermion operator, which is, in this case, will be a charged current operator, so maybe it will be something like B bar U L bar. Okay, so this is a dimension 6 operator. Being a dimension 6 operator has to be suppressed by some scale, and this scale is, in this case, is the W. Ah, so even in the standard model, we know how to build, if I integrate some of the heavy degrees of freedom of the standard model, for instance, the W, I built an effective theory. Okay. Now, if I go beyond the standard model and there are some extra particles, again, I will have a generic construction of this type with all possible operators. So this is one of the operators, but I can exchange it in all different ways. So I built this infinite series of operators. But you see, the fact that there is this 1 over lambda squared, so lambda was a generic way to indicate the masses of this new particle, it means that this effect is very small. In the limit where this mass goes to infinity, the effect, the cap, goes to zero. So this is the complete general finalization of physics. So the two key questions really on general ground of particle physics nowadays are the following two. I mean, first, which is the energy scale of new physics? So if this new particle appears at 100 GeV, 200 GeV, 1 TeV, or maybe even beyond the LHC reach. And so this is clearly something that we can probe only with high energy experiment. But the other question, which is very important, equally important, is which is the symmetry structure of these new degrees of freedom, okay? We need to understand how they interact, okay? And this is something on which we can hope to get some answer from low energy experiment, okay? As far as the first question is concerned, I think this, in a sense, was addressed in the lecture by John and Sven. So clearly, we expect some the energy scale of new physics is not far from the electronic scale, so we expect that we have a strong theoretical prejudice that some new degrees of freedom need to appear around or below 1 TeV to stabilize the Higgs sector, because if this new particle appear well above 1 TeV, then we have this hierarchy problem. So we have strong prejudice that this scale lambda is not far from 1 TeV. And then the key question for fluid physics is if we can reconcile this fact that we have new physics not too far from the tight constant of fluid physics, from the fact that in fluid physics we have not seen any deviation from the standard model. So this is a very challenging question for fluid physics. So coming to the fluid structure of these new degrees of freedom, so we have this, we have seen how the symmetry is defined. So from the gauge sector we have this big fluid degeneracy. This fluid degeneracy is broken by only the Yukawa interaction in the standard model. What we need to understand is how the new degrees of freedom, which are hidden here in this operator, break the flavor symmetry. The nice thing is that here, in principle, we have several new sources of flavor symmetry breaking. So for instance, coming back to this supersymmetry example, here, some new mixing should, in principle, appear here. Doesn't need to be VTS, could be something else, okay? And so we can have a coefficient here which doesn't have the structure that we observe in the standard models. This is why there is still a lot of work to understand what happens in flavor physics. So let me start the last kind of conceptual slide for today. So the next thing is that we would like to determine in a model independent way this coupling, this flavor coupling here. How we can do that? Well, to do it, I think the most safe procedure is, first of all, we need to determine the Khabibov-Kobayashi-Maskawa matrix, or if you want, the Yukawa coupling, using only theoretically clean, non-suppressed process where the Salam model is dominant, like, I mean, three-level decays, okay? And this is relatively easy to be done. Particularly, the only somewhat more difficult things are these B2U decays, which are a bit suppressed in the Salam model, but, okay, nowadays we have been measured precisely, and even the phase can be measured precisely from selected non-leptonic decays, and we'll come back on that tomorrow. Having done this, so having fixed the coupling in the renormalizable part of the Lagrangian, then we can identify a process where the Salam model is suppressed, is calculable with high accuracy, like for instance in box diagram like this one, and then make a comparison with what we predict in the Salam model, having determined the coupling from the three-level process, and compare with data. Okay. So this can be done. Basically, the two most interesting type of process for this type are this neutral maximum mixing amplitude of this type, okay, for kaons and for B, and the series of rare decays. Okay. Clearly, the rare decays, I mean, are interesting because there we don't expect the contribution from this part of the Lagrangian at the three level. Okay, so we expect to be more sensitive to this part here. And of course, then once one has identified a process that can compute precisely in the standard model, can compute it using information determined in a clean way, then one should measure and see if there is room for new physics. So this type of chain, okay, conceptual chain, has been done recently in the case of this famous meson-anti-meson mixing amplitude. So let's look a bit more closely to this amplitude. Okay. So here I even put the correct arrow. And so we have this mixture between B and B bar, which in the standard model goes by anaply of this type, so this is the W, okay, and we have this Q, which means R char on top, okay, and Q prime, which again means R char on top. And so we have this mixing matrix here, so there is no standard model three-level contribution. There is a strong suppression in the standard model, both because it's a loop amplitude and because of the CKM hierarchy, because this element here, we have seen that they are very hierarchical, so if I want to couple a B to a D, so a third generation to a first generation, I need to pay at least 3 power of the Khabibov angle, so it's a very tiny contribution, and I need to do it twice, okay? It's also nice because it's calculable with good accuracy in the standard model, because it's dominated by shear distance dynamics, so it's dominated by the top quark contribution. If the dominant contribution was due to the uptight quark, I wouldn't be able to compute it precisely, and so I couldn't really understand if there is room for new physics or not. Why? The fact that here we have a power-like G mechanism, so the top quark dominate, is a very important point. And finally, this is measured with good accuracy, looking at the time evolution of the neutral meson system. This we'll look at in detail tomorrow. Let me emphasize now what I mean by this power-like G mechanism, which why the top quark contribution is dominant here. Okay. So this is highly technical, but I think it's relatively easy. So we want to compute this amplitude, okay? Not in detail, but we want to understand really the flavor aspect. So I have to sum over all possible quark here, okay, Q and Q prime, and so I have this type of matrix. You see, this is the mixing for the quark Q, and this is the mixing for the quark Q prime. And here I have a loop amplitude, which depends in principle on the mass of Q prime and the mass of Q, okay? And then, of course, depends also on the mass of the W, which is written here. Now, since we have seen that there is this CKM unitarity, which in this case we always have to do with the indices which are not the same, so we have 1 and 3, so we can use this unitarity relation, which allows to eliminate one of these CKN combination in terms of the other two. So for instance, I can eliminate the CKN combination corresponding to the up quark, so VUB star VUD, in favor of the combination of the top quark and the chunk quark. Okay. This is just follow from unitarity. So if I do that, and I do it for the term here with the Q prime, okay, so I still maintain the sum of the Q, but I express explicitly the sum of the Q prime, I get a structure of this type, okay? Having eliminated the VUB, okay, I have the term proportional to VTB, VTD is just proportional to the difference between the top contribution and the up contribution, okay? Because the up contribution comes with the minus sign, and again for the chunk. So you see immediately the structure of the G mechanism. So the G mechanism tells us that if there is no dependence on the quark masses here in this low amplitude, I get zero because I have a cancellation, okay? Similarly here. So it's clear that if this looped amplitude didn't depend on the quark masses, I get exactly zero. Okay. So then let's try to expand this loop amplitude in power of the quark masses, and let's look at the structure of this amplitude. So as I wrote before, this amplitude contains this, okay, before evaluating exactly the matrix cell, so it contains this four quark, okay, B bar D twice, okay, and I should evaluate this between B and B bar. But then the pure loop amplitude has a G to the 4 because I have 4 weak coupling here, okay? I have 1 of 16 pi squared because there is a loop amplitude. I have 1 over MW squared because there is a W propagating here. Then I have generically a constant term plus terms which depend on the quark masses, okay? So if I make a Taylor expansion for small internal quark masses, I get an expansion of this type. The constant term clearly cancels here because of this structure, and so what remains is something which is proportional to the quark masses, and clearly the quark mass which is larger is the top quark contribution, and so this is why I get this large and top here. Okay. So, okay, this is something in a sense historical. Probably you've seen it many times in the books, the how the G mechanism works. And I don't know if you are convinced by this derivation. Are you convinced? You shouldn't be too much convinced, because you see, first of all, there are several things which are not very clear. First of all, I'm making an expansion in small quark masses. Okay, then if this is a Taylor expansion, maybe there are terms which are goes like mq to the fourth, mq to the sixth. So why I should stop here and top square? Okay. Then even more surprisingly, why I get these quark masses in the numerator? I was discussing before, I mean, when we have heavy particle, we typically expect one over the mass of the particle. So this is a well-known theorem, that heavy state decouple in the limit when their masses goes to infinity. So why here the top quark do not decouple? Okay. And why we should stop at this term here? Maybe we don't get something which diverge. I mean, what happens if the top mass goes to infinity? So I think if one does the full calculation, one finds that actually this is a good approximation. But instead of doing the full calculation, I think there's another way to understand it, which is more illuminating. That is, let's switch off gauge interaction, okay? I told you at the beginning, flavor physics has nothing to do with gauge interaction, so we can do this calculation if we switch off the gauge interaction. So if it work, tomorrow I will fix this, If we work in the so-called gauges limit of the standard model, so if I take the standard model and I switch off gauge interaction, still I have my fermion which interacts with the Higgs via the Yukawa coupling, okay? So I have my Higgs field, which now has one massive and three Gostom bosons. These Gostom bosons are not eaten by anybody, so they remain massless, okay? So I have some massless Gostons which interact with the quark. So from the Yukawa interaction, I get something of this type. So I have the coupling between down quark, up quark, and the Goston, okay? And this coupling here allow me to compute an amplitude of this type. Where here now really you see that it appears the Yukawa interaction, which is what indeed should be there. And here I have a massless state, so in principle one could say, well, this is very dangerous, we have a massless state, so maybe there is an infrared singularity. Well, if you do the calculation, you find that there is no problem because there are these quarks which are massive, okay? Because we have mass for the quarks, because we have the Higgs that give mass to the quark, okay? Now, if you remember what I wrote, which is the structure of this, so what enters here, since we have a left-handed down quark coupling to the right-handed up quark, the relevant coupling is the up type of a coupling. So it's convenient to work in the basis where the down quark are diagonal, okay? And we don't care about diagonalizing the up quark and your coupling. So the up quark and your coupling has this structure here. You have seen the CK matrix times diagonal term. Now you see the approximation that we have to do, I mean, that we know that YU and YC are very small, so we can basically neglect the Yukawa coupling of the up, Yukawa coupling of the down, and basically we get this structure here that only the top quark is coupled here, because only top quark has the big U coupling. Okay, so this is about 1, while these two entries are about 0. So let's switch off also these two coupling, and this is a very safe limit, because these are very small coupling. Okay, and so we remain with the structure where we have this YT and the CK matrix. So now if I compute this diagram, so I have only the top quark here, I get this result. Now this result is exact, okay? I've not put exactly the number, I think it's 1/4. Actually, this is a good exercise to do if you have some free time. It's really not difficult. This is a loop calculation where there is only one massive state, which is the top. This is massless. Put 0 external momenta. So it's very simple calculation. If you've never done a loop calculation, maybe it's not worth trying. But if you've done one loop calculation in your life, this you do it in 10 minutes. Okay, and the result is written here. So we have four times the top Yukawa coupling from here, and then we have this CQM term. Okay, then we have 1/16 pi squared, and there is and here the scale is given by m top. Okay, so you see that now correctly the top quark is a denominator. So you see what you'd expected by the decoupling theorem, that the heavy state is down, but there is a coupling which is y top to the fourth power. So of course, in the standard model, the two things are related, and this is why then if I express the top Yukawa coupling in terms of the top mass, because I know that the top quark Yukawa coupling is given by the top mass divided by the Higgs vacuum expectation value, which I indicate here in W, I can rewrite in this other way, which was the one I showed you before, okay, where you see this strange m top square behavior. But if you want, this structure is much more illuminating. It really is what you expect, and show you why you have this non-decoupling. You have non-decoupling because what doesn't decouple is the top Yukawa coupling, okay? It's a coupling which is a denominator. And you see also that, okay, in principle, one could be worried that maybe, okay, if we exchange, now we have massless Gostom bosons, if we exchange very light quarks like up and char, we could get a very big contribution, but that contribution is suppressed by the corresponding Yukawa coupling at the 4th power, which is win again the mass dependent. So clearly the top contribution is the dominant one, and if you want, this is a way to illustrate why really flavor physics is about the Higgs sector. So when people tell you that you should do electroweak physics or do high energy, well, we have already seen the Higgs interaction here. It's being measured precisely, and this is the Yukawa interaction. Of course, we measure the interaction with the Gostom bosons, not with the physical, if you want, with the massive Higgs, but this interaction is clearly there. And so if you do the exact calculation, keeping without switching off the gauge interaction, you get that this result is the correct result in the limit m top much larger than n double. So the full result can be written as the gauge-less result times gauge correction. So these are small corrections with respect to the leading result that you can compute switching off gauge interaction. Okay? Is it clear? So this is why these amplitudes are interesting, because of course if there is some deviation from the Yukawa interaction, we expected to see it here. And so now let's come back to our general program. So our general program was, to construct this chain. So we determine the CKM matrix from three-level process. We have seen that here there is a nice amplitude which is very suppressed in the standard model that we can compute precisely and give this result using only the standard model. Now, if there is this extra tower operator, this extra tower operator contains, for instance, one operator of this type, which was exactly the one I showed before, coming from supersymmetry. So if there is this extra operator coming from supersymmetry, I should expect it here. Okay, so I should expect that in addition to my standard model contribution, I should find something else. And so now, measuring precisely this amplitude, I should try to get some information about new physics. What information we get? Before getting information, let me remind you that, I did this exercise for the B sub D mixing. Of course, I can do the same also for Keon mixing. In the case of Keon mixing, this structure here is exactly the same, but instead of having B and D, I have S and D, because in Keon mixing, I mix the S and the D. And so the B physics combination is VTB, VTD, which is of order lambda cube, if you expand in power at a big angle, because VTD is the only one which is small, okay? So here I have lambda to the 6th power. So this is extremely suppressed because I have 6 power that can be managed. It's extremely small. In quantum physics, it's even more because I have lambda to the 5th power because I have BTS, which is lambda squared, and BTD, which is lambda cubed. So I have lambda to the 5 squared, so it's lambda to the 10, extremely small. So in principle, in quantum physics, we can extract even a stronger bound. Indeed, this is what happens. Now, of course, to determine a bound on the scale of the physics, I need to make some answers about the coupling. So I need to know which is this coupling here, okay? So if I don't know anything, let's say, suppose that there is some new particle. Suppose that there is some new particle which couple D is a new neutral gauge boson. Let me call it A0, which couple B and D, okay. If I put here a coupling of order 1, okay, what I get is that this coupling here is of order 1, and this lambda is the mass of this guy here, okay? So if I do this, so if you want, I assume that there is a new physics at the 3 level, if you want strong interaction with the generic flavor structure, I find that this case should be above 10 to the 4 TeV, not to be in contradiction with the experiment, because this amplitude has been measured, and you will see tomorrow how it is measured precisely, and we don't see significant deviation from the standard model at the 5-30% level, depending on the amplitude. If you look at chaos, the constant is weaker, but the standard model confusion is also so weaker. But anyway, around the 10% level, we don't see deviation from the standard model, so we get a bound on the scale of new physics for this type of new physics, which is huge, 10 to the 4 TeV, okay? Much above the 1 TeV where we would like to have new physics. Well, you say, well, okay, you've done the most stupid model you can think of. Let's do supersymmetry, okay? But let's do supersymmetry, the real generic supersymmetry, okay? If you have generic supersymmetry, and here, you don't know what this coupling is. You would express something of order 1. And then what you get is this. You get a suppression, 1 over 16 pi squared, because this is a loop amplitude, okay? But you get a coupling here which is much larger compared to the one we have in the standard model, so you get a huge bound, okay? Which tells us, for instance, the most naive supersymmetric model is completely killed because we have to push the masses well above the electronic scale. And so this is true for all types of models. Of course, it's not only a problem of supersymmetry, it works also in Technicolor and so on. And this is called the flavor problem of physics beyond the standard model, that if we don't have an extra flavor protection, okay, for physics beyond the standard model, we get this very serious problem. Of course, the way out is to assume that there is some suppression. For instance, if you assume that new physics mimics the standard model, so if you put here this coupling similar to the one we have in the standard model, so I put here generic, I mean, both for B and D, the same type of structure, so I call this alignment, okay? If I don't put the extra 16 pi square, if I put it, doesn't change too much. If I put even the extra 16 pi square, I have the assumption that there is new physics which appear only at dual loop level, and in particular is aligned in flavor, then I get bound on the scale of new physics, which is much more reasonable, around 0.5 TeV or 5 TeV, if it is a strongly interacting theory. In this case, K and B physics give the same type of bound. So you see, looking at flavor physics, we are learning a lot about physics beyond the standard model. We learn that if there are new particles which appear in this loop, they have to have coupling which are very similar to the standard model Yukawa coupling. But this is really a big puzzle because while in the standard model, the Yukawa coupling was the most general thing you could write, okay, there was no other way to couple the quarks among themselves. The only allowed dimension 4 operator are the Yukawa. In supersymmetry, this is not the case. You can write different type of mass matrix, which, for instance, couple left, left, right, right. And so you need to invoke other, you see, you need extra symmetries to suppress this coupling. So this is why it's particularly relevant to study flavor physics, because you learn a lot about the symmetries of the physics beyond the standard model. So I think this led us with some open question. I don't know, maybe I think we can stop here for today. Clearly, so this is what somehow we learned in the recent past from the analysis of B-bar mixing, K-bar mixing. We will see tomorrow how this is done experimentally, but I wanted to first illustrate the problem from a theoretical point of view. Clearly, this leads us with some very interesting open questions. First of all, if we can build models where we have this type of alignment, it's not clear. We will see that there are some models, but require some tuning. An interesting question from the experimental point of view is if we have to impose it also in delta f equal 1 process. So this certainly is the case for the mixing amplitude. Maybe there is a reason why the mixing amplitude are very suppressed beyond the standard model, and maybe on the other hand, in rare the case, we don't have such an effect. So this is something which is definitely interesting to study experimentally. Another interesting question from a theoretical point of view, well, one could maybe hope that we have a model where this new physical contribution is completely absent, so this coupling is zero. And we will see tomorrow that this is impossible because this leads to another type of fine-tuning problem. And finally, of course, the most interesting question from the phonological point of view is if these couplings are not zero but are small, if we can see some deviation from the standard model with more precise measurement or looking at other distribution. So to give you some partial answers to this question in the rest of the lecture, but it's clear that we should admit, in a sense, that we are still quite ignorant about the flavor of structure of physics beyond the standard model. So this is the bad thing, so the good thing is that in a sense there is still a lot to learn from flavor physics in the era of LSE. Okay, stop here. I don't know if there are questions. Detail in the third lecture. Alignment simply means that, okay, this coupling here, okay, which we want is the coupling parameterizing the coupling of the new degrees of freedom to the standard model quarks. I say that is aligned if, in a given amplitude, give the same type of strength that we have in the standard model. Okay. Indeed, it's really not well defined, but I say if I assume that this coupling here is of the same order of the corresponding Yukawa coupling in the standard model, which is very small, okay? It's lambda to the 10 in the case of Keun mixing, is lambda to the 6 in the case of B sub D mixing, okay? This is what I call aligned. So something that mimic the Yukawa interaction also beyond the standard model.
And right?
Sorry?
You would like to learn why actually the Yukawa couples are what they are. And now you say you transport the same structure into the PSN, right? So
yes.
You learn nothing.
Well, I think there are two independent questions. No, you're totally right. I mean, there are two independent questions, which are, first, why the Yukawa coupling are what they are. This is clearly a big question, which I'm afraid we will not get an answer from LSE, okay? Because, actually, we have seen it, we were hoping to get an answer from this looking at the neutrino sector where we have different Yukawa coupling, and we have not understood anything, okay? Probably this is a problem which should be postponed at the gut scale, okay, or to the model where flavor physics is really broken. Okay, my personal opinion, for instance, that flavor physics is broken above the gut scale, or at least at the gut scale. And so this is a very difficult question to address. But we have a much more pressing question for physics at the TV scale that should mimic this structure that we don't understand. I agree that, okay, we have something we don't understand why it is like this, but at least we understand that it's stable. So in the standard model, the Yukawa coupling is the most general structure that we can write, a dimension 4 operator, okay? And it's, once you have small Yukawa coupling, they remain small, even if you include the normalization group effect. So this is a stable hierarchy, okay? Because there is a symmetry, and we have small symmetry breaking terms. Where these small symmetry breaking terms appear, we don't know. What we are seeing here is that if there is new physics at the TV scale, should also have some small symmetry breaking terms with a very peculiar structure.
in this CNP, the last one, the lambda is bigger than 0.5
degrees. Mm-hmm. This also is a good question. You mean?
Because that is the new thing. Yeah, you said it, that the CNP is the new parameter that you introduced for the new physics. Yeah?
Yes.
Then you have a lambda, the
yes.
scale. Then it is 0.5 dB. Mm-hmm. Why we couldn't see anything new until now in B physics?
You mean because you claim that lambda should be. So you see, we have not seen any deviation from the standard model, okay? What I'm saying, if this C is the smallest I can think of, okay, this lambda should be above, because, okay, if lambda is above, it simply means that the new particle should be above this 0.5 dB. So, which is, your question is why this particle are above 0.5 dB, or if
yeah,
this
why
is...
why they are above and why we couldn't see it now? Because
well, if they are above, we cannot see it now. This is what we... Right now, we have not seen anything, and from the fact that we have not seen anything, we deduce that they are above a certain scale.
Okay.
Up to. Yeah, because mu phi is decoupled, okay? So you see it here. Mu phi is decoupled, so if it is above 0.5, no problem. But on the other hand, we know from the Higgs hierarchy problem that they cannot be too far. That is a completely independent upper bound on the scale of mu phi, okay? So if you think that we cannot push lambda above 1 dB because otherwise the Higgs sector is a problem, then it's clear that we have to see something sooner or later if we increase the precision because we are very close. That's, if you want, yes, is the point.
I cannot suppress this. It seems really to be that all this PSM, right, the MSSM, whatever you want, you have really to tune to make it. Make it work in this flavor, to produce the call it the strong flavor. It's always said that the standard model has this instability, right, which is only a statement about counter terms of the standard model, which are not observable. Right. The size of counter terms is questioned by some beyond standard model motivations. But the reliability of the standard model tells us formally that we have no observable sensitivity to ultraviolet color. I mean, this is always, I mean, I just say it because it was so often stressed that we need PSM at 1 dB. But it's completely ignored that the standard model is a renormalizable theory, which means technically that you are able to absorb all ultraviolet effects into your
parameter. But you see, the fact that the standard model is renormalized is an accident. All quantum field theory at low energy are renormalizable by construction because the other, if you have more degrees of freedom, no. This is actually. Sorry. You see, from whatever theory you start off, the low energy limit, okay, will always be a renormalizable theory. This is well known from the. And so the fact that what we identify is only the renormalizable part of the model, it's an accident. It's an accident related to the fact that we have probed the model only to the only dynamical scale, which is actually we have probed below this dynamical scale, which is the Higgs mass. Okay. Now, a quantum field theory of this type, it's well defined. Okay, if there is only I should maybe discuss a bit more. Quantum field theory has this structure. So we have operator of dimension 2, mass term, okay. Operator of dimension, let's forget the odd term, okay. Plus. Okay. And clearly this goes like this, okay. What we identify is this part, is what we call the standard model. So the only dimension 2 operator, which has in front this, the only dimensional coupling, which is related to the Higgs mass, okay. Now, this coupling cannot be arbitrarily large. I mean, otherwise, since we need to have this coupling at the level of the electron scale, clearly, if we think that this description is correct, so that we have an effective theory, this k lambda here should be the same. Okay. Otherwise, the fact that you truncate arbitrarily the series here because you want to have renormalizability, it's your request, but why it should be like this? Who told you that the theory must be renormalizable? It's because you want to compute things and not bother about these other things, which are allowed by the symmetry. It's not a physical requirement. It's a mathematical trick that if you stop the series here, you can reabsorb all the coupling in these two things. But there is no physics behind. On the other hand, you can start from any theory, which is not even a quantum field theory, and the low energy description is always a description of this type. And to keep this k lambda stable, you must have this lambda not to be higher than the mass parameter. So, I mean, renormalizability is not a physical requirement. It's only a mathematical trick that allows you to redefine your parameter.
I don't agree. This is one picture of quantum field theory which
mentions
a lot.
No, but it's quantum field theory.
No, I just want to say, renormalizability, you can state in a mathematical term. Also, I should say that the fact that you absorb infinity into a reparameterization of your theory also, with the same mechanism, allows you to absorb fluctuations from heavy states.
But do you agree that we must have other degrees of freedom for other reasons? For instance, you think that the model at some point must be extended, for instance, to include gravity, you know? At some scale, you need to. So there is a need to include new degrees of freedom, okay? Once you include it, there is no way to prevent this k lambda to get the highest mass scale in the theory, unless you put some intermediate scale which stabilize.
But its mass is just a parameter. And if I
no, it's a parameter, but...
If I measure it to be 150 GeV...
But once you express everything in terms of physical quantities, okay, the normalization of the Higgs mass will depend on also on the physical parameter of the theory. So you have to adjust your parameter at the gas scale, at the tuning. It's a tuning problem. You have to adjust your heavy mass parameter in the theory at the 10 to the minus 15 precision to get that your only dimension 2 operator is 100 GV. Is the tuning at the 10 to the minus 15 that we don't like?
I agree. If there's God, there are corrections like this, right? And we don't understand what's going on. But there's still this picture, and we have seen this plot in the lecture, that if the Higgs is measured as 130 GV, well, the standard model can be well in the bottom of the box. That's it. Right. It's a possibility. We don't like it.
Yes, but when you try to build an explicit theory at the gas scale, then you will find that you have to tune your parameter, your mass parameter, at the 10 to minus 14 precision. Okay, you agree? Okay, this is what I don't like. This.
I don't like it either. But I just say, the argument that there must be physics at 1 degree, I think, is not as strong as it appears here.
Okay. By the way, since you mentioned this, I think I want to advertise. I think there were, I think 1 week ago, some lecture by Weinberg about effective theories, which are on the web, which are very simple, I mean, for students. I think are very illustrative on this point of view. Of course, he also said that renormalizability is really is an accident. I mean, it was nice at the beginning because it was a tool, was a mathematical trick to justify why we were computing things in a certain way. But now that we understand that we can compute exactly the same things with the same precision if we have this higher dimensional operator, and these are perfectly allowed, really, I think it doesn't make too much sense still to impose it. I mean, it's an imposition that we do from theory.
I fully agree with
that. Okay, so... We find agreement at the end of the afternoon, which is good. And we should thank you.